Monster Man, Episode 423, Intellect Devourer to Ishichashitl.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. In today's episode, we've got three monsters, all of which I think appeared in the classic 1977, or 1978 depending, Monster Manual. Let's take a look at how they've changed, or if they've changed, in their new incarnations. First up, we have the Intellect Devourer. I gotta say, I am pretty pleased with the way that Monstrous Manual is demonstrating some efficiency, not only in terms of how it presents monsters, but in terms of how it thinks about them. I'll tell you what I mean. So the 2nd edition Intellect Devourer is pretty much the old Intellect Devourer. It eats psionic brains. It's got an illustration that's perfectly fine, but lacks the menacing atmosphere of the illustration in Monster Manual. It's just kind of basically the same picture, but in color and sort of without the charm or character. But the one major change to this entry is that the Ustalagor, a minor psychic fungus monster from Monster Manual 2, which, not gonna lie, I had completely forgotten existed, has been rebranded as a larval intellect devourer and had its powers brought into line with the new rules. Now that seems like a good use of a monster that I feel didn't otherwise stand out, although maybe I only think that because it was next to the truly bizarre Urchin Kama Land, a monster I do not want to discuss again. But the Ustalagor kind of lacked a compelling, well, hook, again, but was similar enough to the Intellect Devourer, I guess, that you could roll them together. And actually, they perform kind of complementary roles in a tactical problem-solving puzzle-y sense. And again, I think it's a pretty strong pull. I'm happy with the inclusion of the Ustalagor here. There are some monsters that could be improved just by contextualizing them, and one of the easiest ways to contextualize them is to attach them to an existing monster. Though obviously you don't want to go overboard with this. It's possible to have that happen so often that it becomes repetitive. Next up, we have the Invisible Stalker, and we have this classic bit here that also appeared in the first edition. The monster illustration space is blank because it's invisible, get it? That's fine. This is kind of dad humor, but whatever. It's perfectly fine. It's a little in-joke. It's great. The Invisible Stalker is summoned by, you know, wizardy types and used as, well, a sort of assassin. It's invisible and it stalks people. But it has an unreliable servant bit where it doesn't like being told what to do, and so therefore it will kind of interpret its command in the most annoying way possible. So for instance, let's say you told an invisible stalker, keep me safe from all harm. Well, it might just like take you to the elemental plane of air and put you in a glass jar, which would definitely keep you safe from all harm. And in addition to that, there's a mechanic where its sort of loyalty just degrades over time, and the longer you have one, the more likely it is to betray you. I feel like this bit would be more entertaining if it weren't a monster that's typically found working for someone else, so you usually run into an invisible stalker when it is acting as a minion for some kind of evil wizard. But what that means is that all of these kind of nitpicky interactions are happening probably off-screen between two NPCs. Not that it's impossible for player characters to summon one of these creatures, but I would guess that that is not the majority of times that it happens. I guess your kindly wizard mentor could summon an invisible stalker and then have them, like, do a letter of the law betrayal, and then you'd have to go and rescue them. That could be fun. Especially if you knew that they had an invisible stalker, but you assumed that it was some monster that they controlled, and therefore you didn't immediately suspect it. Or, once you learned that invisible stalkers were unreliable agents, you know, when you discovered that you were being invisibly stalked by one, you could sort of try to suborn it. That could also be fun. So there is some potential for this interaction to bear fruit in a way that, like, players can actually enjoy during the game, but it does sometimes feel as if the main instance of that isn't sort of what the writers were envisioning. Anyway, finally, we come to the Ishichashitl. Of all the monsters that might have made it to a later edition, I have to admit that I did not expect the Ishichashitl to make the cut. I'm probably mispronouncing that, by the way. There is a pronunciation guide in the thing, but I've always said it Ixchichachitl. I think that's about right, but it might be Ixchichachitl. Anyway, I didn't necessarily think that the evil magic vampire manta ray would make it into the thing. I wonder how many more of that strange group of thematically dissonant aqua monsters are going to turn up in this edition. I hope it's at least a few. I don't think all of them are necessary, but I'd like to have one or two, you know, for all time's sake. Anyway, they are evil magic vampire manta rays. They're not all vampires, and they're not all magic for that matter. But, you know, the interesting ones are evil magic vampire manta rays who live in pyramid cities on the ocean floor. Fit that into your naturalistic fantasy environment, nerds. I cannot tell you how nice it is, after reading a bunch of absolute hoo-ha about the mating practices of poison-breathing metal bulls, to read this section about the Ixchichachitl and have it tell you that they live in, like, faux Aztec pyramid cities and occasionally emerge to, you know, suck the blood of the living or whatever. Now, actually, having said that, they do a little ecological riff in here because we learned that the Ixchichachitl basically, like, they move in and they kind of, like, exploit the natural resources of a place, and then they move on to somewhere else. I can't decide how I feel about this. I feel like, you know, well, particularly this one's from the 90s, but even in the 70s, you know, I feel like there's a certain kind of polluters in the most obvious sense make classic villains, and the idea of, you know, bad guys moving in to, like, exploit the natural resources and then leave the poor peasants in their thatch-roofed cottages with nothing, or the poor aqua peasants in their kelp forests in this case, I guess. You know, that is a very, like, classic fantasy trope, or indeed, like, a Western trope, right? It ties in, I think, to some romantic notions that are less likable, like kind of treating the people you like as synonymous with the land and casting people you don't like as kind of outsiders who are not in touch with the land. But on the other hand, when those outsiders are evil magic vampire manta rays rather than just people you happen not to like, I think it's a bit more acceptable. Anyway, the Ixchichachitl are bananas, and I'm glad to see them still doing their thing in 1993, proudly and unrepentantly not fitting in at all to this vision of a broadly naturalistic fantasy setting. Let that freak flag fly, evil vampire magic manta rays. All right, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through Monstrous Manual, and we're going to be taking a look at the Jackalware and the Kirin. So I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.